This is episode 23 of the Great Speech Podcast on how to develop a great sounding voice, an interview with Caroline Goyder.
Let's go.
It's a Great Speech Podcast for the public speakers. We're going way down deep to look at what makes a communicator. We'll look at all different topics from the bottom to the top. So get your mind free of all the distractions and please listen up, listen up, listen up.
It's the Great Speech Podcast.
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 Thanks, Dad. Greetings, greetings, my great communicators. How you guys doing? I hope you are well. Welcome back to another episode of the Great Speech Podcast. It is great to have you guys with me. I am Kolarele Shunaike, of course, your communication skills coach, master, Jedi, authority, guru. I don't know what else, but that's what I'm trying to be. And every week, in everything that I do, in fact, not just on my podcast, but on my blog, on my social media postings, on my mailing list in person, I've dedicated my life to finding the answer, or at least getting close to the answer of the question, which is, what does it take to become a great communicator? How can we be outstanding at communicating? Because as I will always say, and you will hear me say many, many times, I believe that it is the great communicators that can change the world. So that is what we're dedicated to on this podcast. And this week is particularly important because this week we are still talking all about the sound of your voice, how you develop a rich sounding voice, how you improve its tone and its bass and its timbre and its pitch and all of the things that go into making a voice worthy of being listened to. Of course, doing a podcast, I've got to really think about my voice a lot. But this week I've gone to a specialist, because I'm not really on that, but a specialist who is really very much and has studied the voice and how it works for many, many years. Her name is Caroline Goyder. She is a voice coach, also a former actor, and she has trained many, many people and many, many companies around the world on the question of how to use your voice to develop and project your authority. She's also the author of a few books, actually. One that's just come out, which is a very, very, really authoritative text on the subject of how to develop your voice. It's called Find Your Voice, The Secret to Talking with Confidence in Any Situation. Before that, she'd written another book called Gravitas, Communicating with Confidence, Influence and Authority. And that is a really excellent book as well on the subject that I've very much been obsessed with, which is how you develop that sense of gravitas and authority in how you project yourself. So I was really pleased to get her on my podcast and interview her. I first came about her work, or came to learn of her work, when I saw a TEDx talk that she had delivered in Brixton, which is now on YouTube and has 7.6 million views at the time of recording this podcast on YouTube alone, not to talk of the TED, other video websites and stuff like that. So phenomenal talk called The Surprising Secret of Speaking with Confidence. And that's a really fantastic TED talk. One of the best ones, actually. So I urge you to go and watch it. She uses the famous part of it is that she uses a big wardrobe called Big TED that is designed like a human body. And she uses that to illustrate what it takes and the different elements of using your voice. And what it takes to actually develop a rich sounding voice. So in this interview, we explore all things about the sound of your voice, why it's so important. And she gives us some techniques on how to develop it further. She explains the thing that I don't know if you guys have it, but I certainly do, of where when you hear your voice played back to you, it always sounds different. Usually you think it's worse than it does in your head. And she actually explains the kind of the mechanics of why that is. We discussed the definition of gravitas. She's got a fantastic definition, which when you hear it kind of makes perfect sense and also gives you the sense that, oh, okay, actually, I could actually work on that if that is what gravitas really is. She helps with all sorts of things like how to think of your voice as an instrument, where to find your diaphragm and how to use it. And also we discussed something which was a really fascinating kind of factoid that she talks about in her book, which is what happens to your breath when using a mobile phone, which is one that surprised me, that I think will probably surprise you when you listen to it as well. So we cover a lot of stuff on this subject. She really is an authority in it, and it was a real special pleasure to have her on the podcast. The audio quality is not great. I'd sent her a link that I normally use and she wasn't able to use it with her computer. That's probably my fault, which means we had to go to either Skype or Zoom. I can't remember which one, on which the audio is not as great as it normally is, but it's still pretty good. You'll still hear everything totally fine. It's probably just me being a bit picky. You probably won't even notice. But all in all, really, really fascinating interview. I want to really thank Caroline for coming on. As usual, you will see all the links in the show notes. So just scroll down and you'll be able to click on all the stuff that she does, all the stuff that I do. I am running some free, in fact, which I do not often do, one-to-one sessions on communication skills. If you manage to book a slot, very often you won't be able to, but if you manage to book a slot, really worth taking it, because I've set aside some time to do that. But otherwise, just listen, enjoy. Make sure you subscribe and click that notification button so you get told when the next episode comes along. And of course, share it and send me a review, which I will give you a shout out on. Okay, without further ado, here am I and Caroline Goyder on the subject of how to develop a rich sounding voice. Okay, everyone, welcome back to the Great Speech Podcast. And I do have Caroline Goyder, who is joining me via Zoom, because that's how we have to do things in this online lockdown business. How are you, Caroline?
I'm good. I'm very much locked down.
Yeah, and where is lockdown for you?
Lockdown is on the Solent, looking out at the Isle of Wight, so it could be worse. Yeah.
So that is exactly how to do a lockdown. that's the best way. I mean, we've got a park and kind of the garden, so that's fine. But yeah, that would be lovely looking out over. And how are the kids finding it?
The kids are feral, but beyond that, the kids are fine.
I was saying to you earlier that mine don't respect my signs of the "do not come in, daddy is recording" thing. Do they respect yours?
Let's find out.
Excellent. All right, so I start all my episodes with a quote, and when I have a guest, I leave that honor to the guest. So if you can give us a quote, if it's by someone, tell us who it is by as well, but just explain what it means to you as well.
The quote I love is, "Fear is excitement without the breath," which is from Fritz Perls, who was the founder of Gestalt Therapy. But it's just really good quote for public speaking, because that's it. If you speak with a relaxed, centered breath.
Oh, we lost you a little bit there. Yes, the wonders of technology. Hey, I lost you a little bit there, but we'll leave. I would say I will leave stuff in, right? So yeah. Do you want to give me the quote again? Because we kind of lost you a little bit.
Fear is excitement without the breath, which is Fritz Perls, and so simple, so brilliant.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so listen, Karen, I really wanted to have you on the podcast because I've followed your stuff for quite a while anyway. I was looking because I got your Gravitas book, which is fantastic, phenomenal. I realized, although I didn't know it, that you had a book before that called The Star Qualities.
Indeed.
So I didn't know about that, so I'll ask you a little bit about that. But you've got a new book coming out, or that's just come out, called Find Your Voice, which again, I'm going to want to kind of talk to you about as well. But the first question I have, actually completely different, is where is Big Ted? Big Ted, where is he? It's like such a, that was, I'll explain later what, or you can explain what Big Ted is, but where is he right now?
So George McCallum is the maker, the creator of Big Ted. And George McCallum is probably in South London somewhere right now in lockdown. And Big Ted, I suspect, is with George. Should I explain a bit?
Yes. So not everyone will have followed your stuff as avidly as I do. But yeah, just tell everyone what Big Ted is.
In brief, I did a TEDx in Brixton in 2014, which has had 7.5 million views. Mm. And the highlight of that TEDx is George McCallum's brilliant chest of drawers shaped like a man's torso, which is as mad as it sounds. And he is a genius. And in the talk, I opened the drawers to pull out three objects, which summed up the secrets to speaking with confidence. And that is Big Ted. I haven't seen Big Ted since 2014. So.
Oh, right. I see. I assumed you just got to take him away with you as opposed to.
We practically needed a truck and he's enormous.
Yeah. I mean, that was really innovative. And yeah, I didn't know it, the TED Talk had got 7 million views. That's incredible. That's phenomenal. But it was really, really brilliant. I mean, was that something that before you started crafting the talk, you decided, I want to have that kind of prop? Or did it kind of just grow organically as an idea?
It was totally organic. I had a brilliant speaker coach at the time called Denise Graveline, who sadly died.
My goodness. Yes. So, I want to ask you about her because I love Denise's stuff. Yeah.
Oh, she was a total rock star of this. And I'm devastated still that she's not with us anymore. But she and I were talking and she said, maybe find a prop. And we were talking about the idea of drawers in the self, which is a line from the director, Peter Brook. Mm-hmm. And so I literally just Googled chest of drawers, human body. And up pops this image of a man's body shaped as a chest of drawers. And so I looked closely and it said George McCallum Peckham. And I was like, but I'm in Brixton. This is meant to be.
Oh, fantastic.
And I contacted him and said, can I borrow your chest of drawers? And he said, yes, of course.
Oh, superb.
And then he made all the other props as well. He's a genius. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Gosh, that's really good. That's definitely fate, wasn't it? Yeah. Great prop. Actually, just before we do on that, I just wanted to come back to you on Denise, because so I wrote an article about my favorite 10 speeches by women, because I always say that so many of the speeches you see, it's always just the men, you know, Churchill, Steve Jobs. It's like, okay, I knew a lot of great speeches that just weren't being featured. So I did an article on it. And when I was searching, I came across Denise's site. It was just this amazing index of great speeches by women. And I reached out to her and we kind of engaged that way. She was really generous. And then a few years later, I wanted to do a podcast on the subject. And I reached out to her. I didn't hear back. So that's a bit surprising. And I kind of left it. And then I went and searched again. And I only saw on Twitter, somebody commented that she passed away. I don't know why it affected me so much. I was really devastated. So the fact that you knew her, tell me about her a little bit. I know it's not part of our chat,
no,
but
fine,
yeah.
She was like an encyclopedia of great women's speeches, and was absolutely passionate about them, and has still, I think, her great site is up, and it's a fabulous resource of great women's speeches. And it's just a tragedy that she's not with us anymore, because she was a huge advocate of women speakers and a really great speaker coach as well. So
yeah
far too soon.
Yes, indeed. All right, okay. Well, let's not dwell too much on that. Otherwise, we'll both get a bit sad. If you can hear, it's raining where I am, by the way. So that's why I can hear some noise in the background, possibly. So you yourself are, how would you describe yourself? Like, if somebody does the whole, you know, hey, what do you do? Well, how do you describe yourself?
I'm a voice coach. And it's funny, I love the voice, and I think it's a deeply underestimated part of who we are as human beings. So that's really what I do. I'm a voice coach. I'm a speaker coach.
Yeah. How did that come about? Is that something that, you know, sometimes I speak with guests and you can kind of track how they got there from birth almost, you know, they're fated to do it, or is it something you fell into later? How did you become a voice coach?
It's funny. If I go back to being a tiny kid, I loved music and movement, and I always loved words. And then I got sidetracked in the sense that I was good at English and I was mm-hmm. good at writing stuff. So I ended up at Oxford studying English, writing essays.
Right.
And that was all great. But there was a point where I started teaching English, and I wasn't really very happy. And someone suggested to me that I look at acting, and so I trained as an actor, which was
okay.
thing to do, but great fun. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you train as an actor, you have voice coaches, and yeah. and I had a lovely voice coach who suggested, "Why don't you train in voice?" And I did, and I've never looked back. Being right. an actor was a bad idea, but being a voice coach was a really good one.
yeah. Gosh, hey, that's pretty cool. And so for many who, I think a lot of people understand, yeah, you've got to work on your public speaking, your communication skills, but I don't think many think about the fact that they actually have to consider their voice as well and how important that is. So can you, you know, for those who are unconverted, right, unlike me, why is the voice such an important factor for you in terms of establishing yourself as authority, whatever it is?
So the mistake we make is to think about the voice as a kind of surface thing, like, you know, elocution or style or your hair or that stuff. And it's something that we can style, and that's not what the voice is at all. The voice is exhaled air, it's breath. And if you can think of anything more important than breath, I can't, right? Without breath, we don't exist. Mm. So why would you not want to understand how to use something that is the expression of your aliveness? It's as simple as that. And in Tibetan philosophy, they don't talk about mind, body, spirit. They talk about mind, body, voice. And to me, that's where we should all get to, because spiritus in Latin, you know, inspiration all speaks about breath. Why not speak about voice in the same, you know, same way?
God, okay, that makes sense. And in terms of what, one of the things I was reading your book, which I say I had to stop myself and try and do it, was what you just referred to it, that you when you speak on the exhale, right, not on the inhale. And I thought, is that right? So I started trying to do it, and I realized, yeah, you can't speak and inhale at the same time, or it's very difficult. I don't know if it's impossible. But yeah, that was a kind of a very interesting little tip that I learned from you there.
It's funny that mm-hmm. we don't think about it at all, isn't it? It's so unconscious, but it's like learning to run or learning to play football or learning to drive. When you make things conscious and then wire them back into the unconscious, you start to have real fun with it. And that just takes a change in habit.
Yeah, indeed. So books wise then, you got into the acting, and then you got into voice coaching. When did the books start? Because you wrote the first one, as I say, that I hadn't read, was the How to Sparkle with Confidence in All Aspects of Your Life. I've got that as 2009.
Yes. Yes. So I was working at Central, which is a big drama school in North London. And I had the idea, why don't I go and ask actors, you know, A-list actors about confidence, because they're quite good at that. Mm. And being at a drama school, of course, you have access to agents and producers in the business. So it was easy to get access to A-list actors. So it's quite a light, fluffy book with some quite seriously useful things that I still use, like George Clooney's tip about imagine talking to old friends. Brilliant.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
Use it all the time. You know, so it is. It was quite a sparkly, light book, but actually there's some quite serious stuff in there that I use a lot.
Do you want to do some name dropping? Any other actors that gave you some great tips? We've got Clooney already. That's already serious A-list.
Clunk. He didn't, and I didn't interview him actually, so that was a tip that I gleaned. But
right.
In the first week, I said I was going to write this book, and someone said to me, well, you need to go and ask actors if they'll talk to you. Mm. And so I thought, oh, I better write to people. And she said, and don't go for the lower level ones. You've got to start with the A-list, because that's the only way it's going to work.
Wow.
So I researched Helen Mirren, Kate Winslet, and Kate Blanchett, and wrote each one of them emails, and they all came back in the first week and said yes. And at that point, I thought, oh my God, I've got to write this book.
Yes. It's going to work.
It was just a kind of, that's just started the process. It was hard work to write, because to get those people to talk to you and then to cook down what they tell you into a short book, it was quite an interesting challenge. Mm. I learned loads.
Which was your favourite quote or favourite tip that any one of the actors gave you?
I tell you the one that I literally use every day of my life when I feel nervous is Bill Nighy. You know, he's the actor in Love Actually.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. And he said, if you're nervous, don't put it all on you. Don't think it's about you. Just think, how can I help? So on a film set, think about, what are the crew doing? What's the best boy doing? What's the grip doing? What's the sound man doing? And how can I help these people make this film a success? And he said, then you stop thinking about yourself and you become a much more of a team player. And as a barrister, I'm sure that's true. Well, actually, it's probably different in court, isn't it? You're not a team. You're not necessarily more like football.
Yeah. So that's a whole different ball game, what you should focus on as a barrister. But that's interesting, because I actually see that kind of permeating through your work, because you do a lot of stuff on dealing with nerves and handling. And I've seen you focus a lot on telling people, hey, focus on the message you want to share and how you're helping them. And that will take the focus off you as a presenter or whatever it is. So I can see that kind of thread flowing through. And then the next book, which is the first one that I got into, was Gravitas, which was really kind of about how to communicate with confidence and influence and authority. So how did you then move from general voice coaching to thinking more, which is kind of a broader subject, right, about how you convey yourself with authority?
It's funny, isn't it? Often with books, the world asks you for something. And the thing that I was being asked for all the time was this thing, Gravitas. I was doing a lot of work with broadcasters at the time. And so it was obvious that reporters going from print journalism to anchoring or reporting on air, they were saying, I've been told I need more gravitas. But also with corporates, with business people, with barristers, with wannabe politicians, MPs who wanted to step up, I was hearing people were saying, I want more gravitas. And women in particular were saying, I've been told I need more gravitas, but I don't want that. And so that, because I like a challenge, we were talking about being challenged, and I thought that was really interesting. Why do women think they don't want gravitas? And how can I reframe this word for the modern age? Because we don't all want to be Churchill or Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't suit my life to speak with that level of power. But can we find a version that suits the modern age?
Mm.
Suits real life.
So what is your definition then of gravitas in a way that means it's kind of accessible to everyone, not just those that want to be, the next prime minister or something?
We change, and I wrote that book in 2014, and the definition, which I still stand by, is a kind of distillation of Aristotle, really, and it's gravitas is knowledge plus passion plus purpose minus anxiety.
Wait, go back. Got to say that again, because I know there'll be people stopping and pausing to write down. So give us that again.
So knowledge plus passion plus purpose minus anxiety.
Right, and right.
If you think about Governor Cuomo, Jacinta Ardern, the speakers at the moment who are showing up on the world stage, Merkel is having an interesting,
brilliant.
She's coming across really well at the moment,
yeah.
And they have knowledge, it helps to be a scientist in this time with Angela Merkel.
Mm.
They have purpose. She's clear on what she wants to achieve. She has the right amount of passion. If she was launching an election campaign, she would need more, but right for the moment, she has the right amount. And she looks calm.
Yes.
And that's the combination.
Yeah. So by that measure, that probably explains why Trump falls short, because he stops at the knowledge part, right?
Yes. And, it's so interesting. I'm thinking a lot about US politicians at the moment, and there's also an aspect of Trump that he doesn't seem as calm. He doesn't seem like someone who has self-awareness or self-knowledge or calm. And so he's easy to destabilize. And that worries us because he's flying the plane. If he's destabilized by turbulence, we're all in big trouble. And so we need people right now who seem and are, not just seem, are centered in turbulence, are able to center themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And so what was your, because I've written a lot of in terms of comparing Trump and Obama. So what was your assessment then of Barack Obama in terms of gravitas? I mean, he seems to me to be all gravitas, but, you know.
I think he's amazing. I think, and I was told, I haven't had this corroborated, that he was told at Harvard that he would never make a politician because his oratory wasn't good enough. So what's interesting is that he's a natural, he seems like a natural, but he's not, he has learned it. And his wife's pretty damn good as well.
Yeah.
Such natural speakers and who've learnt it. And that's the paradox.
It's interesting you say that. I actually have this thing that I think she is a better speaker in that she does stories so much better, I think, actually, than Barrett. But he does the good kind of big stage affair, you know, thing. But I think she's in a way almost more natural. Okay, so... Yeah, yeah. So let's come back to, actually, before we come back to that, I wanted to ask you something on Gravitas, the book, because one thing I noticed on Amazon, loads and loads of reviews for the book. I don't know, I always tend to go to I look at the 5-star ones, you know, it's people just say, oh, it's brilliant, no matter what, right? And then I always look at the kind of 2- and 3-star ones, because I tend to feel that usually the 3-star ones, people have been, they genuinely read it and they genuinely have views about it. And I noticed on the 2-star reviews, you'd responded to every single one. Tell me about, I thought that was fantastic, but why did you feel you needed to do that?
So I started doing it because on US Amazon, there was a review that's really negative and it's worth going to have a look at it. And it talked about me as I was younger at the time. When you see her speak, she's like a 30-year-old girl. And I was like, a 30-year-old girl? Okay, that's interesting. And so I could see that this was coming from quite a specific place. Someone was annoyed about a woman daring to write about, how dare she? How dare she? This is, you know, this is not for you, 30-year-old girl. I'm clearly not a 30-year-old anymore. So I started to reply, and I just replied and said, I understand that you think Gravitas is in, you know, one in the school of hard knocks. And to some extent, that's true. I am never going to be Winston Churchill or Barack Obama or, you know, Martin Luther King. I'm not aiming to. But why shouldn't we all have the capacity to speak with centered power? And is that just the right of, you know, white middle-aged males? No, I don't think it is, you know. So I started replying and then I thought, okay, this is quite fun. It's quite good to take on challenge. And I'm not going, you're wrong, because they're right. They're right in their worldview. And so it's interesting to have a conversation about it.
Yeah, no, well, good on you. I did notice that, although I noticed you didn't bother with the 1-star ones, which I was glad at, because I'd find it hard to give any book a 1-star. You know, if the person's taken time to write something, it's got to be more than 1-star. So I was glad you kind of just like, yeah, fine. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so let's kind of bring it to voice then specifically, because you know, voice is obviously at the center of what you do. And I imagine in terms of your views of how that helps you gain gravitas as well, that a voice is a big part of that. So again, for people who have never thought about their voice and you've explained why it's important, if they now agree that, okay, wow, yeah, maybe I should do or work on my voice in some way, where should they start? What should they do?
Ooh, gosh, that's a good question. So I think we should start where kids start, right? Because kids have great voices. Young children have great voices. So just things like playing with sound, singing, you know, exploring your range. If you have children at home, read stories to them, make funny noises. And just the voice responds really well to playfulness. And when I started out learning about my voice, I was very serious about it because, I don't know, I'd always been serious about stuff, but the voice is best when we're light. Because when we're light, we find physical ease in the breath, in the body. And when we have physical ease in the breath and the body, the whole thing just opens up. So play, sing, put music on. I like yoga, so I chant, but that's not for everybody. Mm. It's just as good to put some music on that you love and sing your heart out. It doesn't have to be in tune. I mean, apart from for your neighbors. Or yes. But, you know, yeah. It's have fun with your voice is the secret, and then it will just show up.
Mm-hmm. And I see you talk about the voice as an instrument. That was one of the things that I suspect is one of the things that really resonated with the TEDx talk you gave, because it really made you think about the voice not just as something that happens to be inside of you, but as an instrument. Like I think you used a guitar or something like that. So help people understand what that means in terms of how can you look at the voice as an instrument, and then that may help you think about how to develop it further.
It's such a great instrument, the voice, and it's thinking about the larynx as being the string tucked away behind your thyroid cartilage is the larynx, which is just we're just a series of sphincters is the glamorous way to put it, but it is it's a set of muscles that when you send air through vibrates and it produces sound. And if you understand that that's the string, but it's not the hitter, then you understand that breath is really, really important, and breath powers out of the body and it hits the larynx and the larynx vibrates and that produces sound. Then you've got the string, you've got the hitter, and you've also got the body of the instrument, which is really, strictly speaking, the bony cavities above the larynx. But you also can resonate the rest of the body through sympathetic conduction, bone conduction. So you've got the string, you've got the hitter, the airflow, and then you've got the body of the guitar. We are just really a walking instrument.
A walking guitar,
that's quite
yes.
Fun. I mean, that's quite fun, isn't it?
Yeah. And in terms of the breath, that we've got to be thinking about our diaphragms, right? Rather than the shallow breathing from our lungs. So again, a lot of people just won't even have thought about that. So how should somebody find their diaphragm, and what can they do to kind of encourage themselves to breathe from there rather than from their kind of chest and shoulders?
Great question. And I heard a great stat this morning on a breathing webinar. I'm doing a lot of webinars.
Oh, wow.
That said that 70% of people chest breathe, and so only 30% of people really use their diaphragm as we should. And that's why we're having mental health issues. So the diaphragm is a voice thing. It's also a health thing. Simplest way to find it is to, if you take a thumb and just put a thumb, for women, this is easy because it's where the bra strap is, just below the bra strap. For men, you just kind of have
all right. I'll try and imagine where mine is.
Or if you were wearing one, where that would be. And just, that's the front point of attachment of the diaphragm. And it cuts us in half. It looks a bit like a mushroom or a hat, it's been described as. An umbrella is another way it's described. I like to think of it as a jellyfish. So if you imagine that you have a jellyfish cutting you in half at that point, as you breathe in, the jellyfish descends, flows down your torso. And as you breathe out, the jellyfish rises up your torso. So if people listening just close their eyes and just put a hand on that point, just where your bra strap would be, and just feel that as you breathe in, the jellyfish of the diaphragm moves down.
Yeah.
And as you breathe out, the jellyfish of the diaphragm moves up. And maybe just do that a couple more times. And notice there's a pause between the movement of the breath. Jellyfish moves down as you breathe in. There's a pause. And then the jellyfish of the diaphragm moves up. Now, the more that you can just start to feel that flow inside you, that's when it took me a while. I had to practice it a little bit every day. And then it starts just to become much more natural. And you notice when you go back to chest breathing. But really, we should do that all the time. If we stand well, if we consciously think about breathing low and wide, then everybody can breathe diaphragmatically.
And that then gives you more power for the breath which then presumably gives you more. I mean, is it power in the voice you're talking about, or is it roundness? You know, what should we be aim? What's the kind of the ideal voice sound, if there is such a thing?
So I can tell you, I can kind of show you what happens to me when I don't do it, right? Mm-hmm. So if I've been sitting at a laptop all day and my shoulders are tense and my jaw's a bit tense and I'm chest breathing, then I can quite happily start to speak from here. Right. And, you know, I spent a long time in my life talking from here. What you can hear is it's faster because the breath's coming in to the upper chest, the upper lungs, and not really going much lower down than that. And it also is thinner. The sound is flatter. It's thinner. There's less space for the sound because everything's kind of tight and up in the upper chest. Whereas if we kind of find our alignment, and if you have space for the breath to drop into the lowest part of the lungs where most of the blood flow is, then you start to, as you said, get a sound that's much more open. It's much richer. And it's not forced. It's just you on a Sunday morning hanging out with the people you feel relaxed with no pressure. It's the voice that is most you. And that's where elocution really messes with people's heads, because people think elocution is about sounding really nice. And that's a faking it thing. Whereas voice work is about being really you, the most you can be. And that's why I get kind of annoyed that people get it wrong, that it's not about funny voices. About being yourself.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's well, actually, in fact, I'm going to now. I mentioned before we started that I was going to challenge you at some point. This is a new thing I'm bringing into my podcast guest interviews, where there's something that I query, either I disagree with it mildly or violently, or I want more clarification. So the point that I wanted to kind of challenge you on is, I've heard you talking about, and I know there's research that backs it up, that actually just generally deeper voices to human beings tend to connote more authority, more gravitas. And so you see a lot of leaders actually have deeper voices and so forth. And we know the kind of the example of Margaret Thatcher did a lot of elocution lessons to kind of round and deepen her voice. So my challenge is, doesn't that just make people, if people go that route because they want to do that because they've, you know, seen what you say, for instance, doesn't that make people just be inauthentic, right? It's you're trying to craft your voice and it's not really you, which for me is not that it's the opposite of gravitas, but I don't see that you can be have gravitas and be inauthentic at the same time. So that's my challenge to you to take it up.
So that I like that challenge, and absolutely, what I'm not saying is that we should all try to do this, you know, because it worked for her because she was the only woman, you know, and she kind of had to be a man, right, at that time. It wouldn't work for a female politician now because you don't have to be a man anymore. I know that may be controversial to say that Margaret Thatcher was trying to become a man, but totally I think she was.
You're right, yeah.
Now, so I'm not saying to people push the tone, the note. I what I don't mean is talk on a low note in your voice the whole time, because that's just hard work and it's really not that good for your voice either. What I'm saying is much more about what we've just explored, which is find a sound that is centered low down in your body and that resonates a rich, it has a rich tone because of where it's placed and how you're resonating it. Like when you hear someone playing the saxophone and they play it really well, it has a richness of tone and it's not squeaky. That's what we're going for with voices. And it's not about hitting a certain note. It's not about lowness. It's about richness, like a great saxophone.
I got you. And again, that comes back to the thing. Yeah, thinking of it as an instrument does make that make more sense, actually. My son plays the cello. Oh, wow. And I remember when, you know, when they start out, everything sounds like a squeak, right? Thankfully, it's better than the violins. The violin's really squeaky. Cello is a lower register, so it's not as harsh. But I notice when he went from, they start on the quarter-sized cello, then they go up to half cello, and I think he's on a three-quarters of the moment, I can't remember. But I noticed that the sound was getting richer each time he graduated, even though it was exactly the same note. Which I assume is because it's coming from a, in a sense, a larger space in the body or something. I'm not sure, but I did notice that. So I if that relates to what you're saying, that I understand that.
So I think that's a really good analogy, because actually with the voice, the better your posture is, the more centered your breathing is, the less tense your hip flexors are, the more relaxed your ribs are, you know, all of this kind of thing. Basically, the bigger the cello you're creating and the bigger the cello you have, the richer the sound. And so that's what we're aiming for. And sometimes when people think I have to force my voice down, they tense their jaw, they tense their breathing, and it just creates something that sounds like really hard work. And that's the opposite of what you want to do, for sure. Yeah.
And posture is important as well, even for the voice, you say?
It's massive, she said, straightening up. It's really important, because if you think about the voice as an instrument, the powerhouse is air. And if I, you know, sit forward at my laptop and I hunch my, this is a really good angle, I can tell. And, you know, if I hunch forward, then I'm cutting off the airflow. And as soon as you cut off the airflow, you've really lost the instrument. And this is the problem. It's kind of why I wrote the recent book, because so many of us spend a lot of our lives staring at phones or staring at screens or sitting. And then we wonder why our voices don't show up the way we want to. It's because we're holding ourselves the wrong way. So movement, stretching, running, dancing, singing, you know, all of that stuff is what you need to do for a good voice.
Yeah, and I saw something in the book about some research that when people use their smartphones, they either hold their breath or they breathe more shallow.
Yes.
What is that about? That
was apnea. Screen apnea is the thing. People, it's worth checking out. You know, when you check your messages, especially if you get a stressful one. I got one from my accountant this morning. I probably did hold my breath.
Yeah.
We start to hold our breath, or we just breathe into the upper chest because of the way we're sitting. And that has a really big impact on our health, our nervous systems, and also on our voices.
Okay. And because I saw you also say, so because it's one of my bugbears, which I see a lot of generally younger people, which is giving a speech using a phone as your notes.
It drives me nuts. It's awful. I'm always pulling tablets out of people's hands and going, you cannot do your speech with the tablet in your hand. Yeah.
Well, but I've never had a good reason to say, so now I'm going to say, listen, it's going to make you breathe more shallow, and then your voice isn't going to sound as rich. That's going to be my one there. Tell us about the book then. So it's called Find Your Voice. What does it cover? What does it kind of teach?
Find Your Voice is really the TED Talk developed into a book, because it's my belief that everybody who has a voice, has breath, can speak with confidence. And it's helping someone understand how the voice works, how they can hold themselves well to speak well, how they can handle nerves, and then how they can express themselves with confidence, with clarity. And it's interesting because I wrote it, you know, way before we'd heard of coronavirus, but it's a book that's not just about public speaking. It's about, you know, if you're podcasting or doing this, you know, Zooming, if you're having to do a webinar, it's for anybody using their voice in any situation. And so Gravitas is a bit more about showing up face to face. This is a book just about using your voice.
Which is even more important now during lockdown, right? When everything is not in close proximity, but either by phone or, as you say, Zoom and so forth.
The voice is so important. It's like, I mean, it's weird talking about the medium while we're using it, but I feel like Zoom is, the difference between Zoom and real meetings in real life is like film and theatre for actors. And actors train to do film and they train to do theatre. And there's a set of tools that are the same, but they do it slightly differently. And I think we all need to learn how to use our voices for the medium of Zoom with a mic, with a camera. And it's just a different kind of energy, but it does take energy. Because if I just flatten out and take all the energy away and kind of talk to you as if we're emailing each other, then you want to kill yourself for about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
All day.
It's like the teacher in Ferris Bueller, right? It's like Bueller, anyone.
And it's just understanding the medium, and you do have to give it a bit of energy. You have to have energy when you start a call.
Any tips apart from, I think you talked about just play with your voice, you know, use it like a child in a way, which is really useful advice. Any tips on if I want to take it serious and I thought, okay, every day I want to do something, I'm going to spend 10, 15 minutes doing something to build and improve the richness of my voice. What kind of things should we do?
I can tell you what I do, which is, what's worth saying is that for years I was the voice coach who knew what I should do. And I was giving actors, 40 minute warm-ups in class, but I wasn't doing it myself. And you feel like a fraud.
Yeah.
And then about 15 years ago, I started doing something for 5-10 minutes each day. And it was so profoundly powerful for my voice that I've done it ever since. And what works for me is to do a little bit of stretching. I like yoga, but it doesn't have to be, anything that you need as a stretch for a few minutes. Then I'll do a little bit of breathing work, and it could be a, mindfulness app. It could be just that you think about the in-breath, the pause, the out-breath, the pause, like we've just done. Mm-hmm. And then personally, I like chanting. So you could do an om or a hum, but a long, relaxed hum. It's just as good as an om. And then you can just start to play with range. So if you do a you just kind of get the sound buzzing onto your lips, buzzing into the bones of your face. And then you might turn that into a ma or a mo. And you just, it's really just being playful. I mean, it's back to that thing. But just going from a hum to a ma and a mo. You might play with different vowel sounds. And then, say you're going into court, you might then take a few words that you might say as an opener to a judge or to a jury, say a few of those lines, maybe take out all the vowels and just say the consonants so that you really get the mouth moving. And then you might take out all the consonants and just say the vowels, because that's where the resonance and the emotion are. And then you might put that back together, same sentence, with the vowels, with the emotion, and with the consonants and the clarity. And you suddenly notice that your voice is way more alive. And when you start to speak at work, you just go, hello, I'm here. And people listen to you differently. So just for someone to do a couple of minutes of stretching, a couple of minutes of breathing, a couple of minutes of humming and singing and going through their range, and then a couple of minutes of take out the consonants, take out the vowels, put the sentence back together, your day will properly rock if you do that, because you will sound great and people will notice.
Can we do that in the shower? Because I'm thinking I could, if I went to court, then just before I went into court, I started doing that. My clients would probably become, exactly. Is it the kind of thing we could say, okay, you know what, I'm for the next month, whatever it is, I'm going to focus on this every morning in the shower, when I come out, I'm going to do this exercise.
Exactly. I mean, it can be just part of your routine. If you have to make breakfast in the morning, or if you have to put your eyeliner on, you probably don't have to do that. it's finding those rituals in your morning where you could just make a bit of sound. And if you hook it into one of those rituals, all the research shows that that's when we stick to it. And it's a really good thing to do for confidence. There's loads of research on voice and singing and the impact it has on our confidence and our calm through something called vagal tone is massive. It has a really big impact.
Yes, vagal tone. This is probably getting a bit geeky here, but I saw that and I didn't want to say I had no idea what on earth that was, but I really had no idea what that was and I didn't have time to research it. So what is a vagal tone? What exactly does that mean?
I mean, this is vagal tone for dummies, because I am not a scientist. And if people want to go to the real man, Stephen Porges has done some really interesting research on the vagus nerve. So he's Porges. Just go online and look for Porges and vagus nerve. You will find the whole thing. But in a nutshell, the vagus nerve is the longest cranial nerve in the body. People know about it for gut health and nutrition because it goes through the gut and feeds information back to the brain. But it also feeds information from the larynx to the brain because it also goes through the larynx. So when we're staring at our screens, when we're in text neck, that creates something called low vagal tone. And low vagal tone is like how we show up when we're feeling threatened. You've had a bad day and your voice is a bit flat and a bit fast and you're not really listening and we're a bit reactive. I mean, we're probably all having days like that right now, some of us. Obviously, I'm
with homeschooling, yes.
So, you know, it's important that we look after our vagal tone with homeschooling right now.
Yeah.
High vagal tone is where we feel at our best and we listen and our voice has music and we react. Our faces smile when someone smiles. We look serious when they look serious. We flow with people. We want good vagal tone for a good voice.
Okay.
The simplest way to get it is firstly, look after your posture. And secondly, vagal tone is improved by a longer out breath. So if you're having a really bad day, breathe out for four, breathe in for four, breathe out for six, breathe in for four, breathe out for eight, breathe in for four. And just lengthening the out breath gently and slowly will help your vagal tone and it will help your voice.
Great. Okay. Well, that's helped me with something I had no idea about. I wasn't too embarrassed to ask, which is good. The book, there's an audiobook as well, right? Is it an audiobook now or?
Just recorded it. I recorded it a couple of weeks ago.
And you did it?
Yeah.
Oh, good, okay.
One of the perks of writing a book is to record the audiobook.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
I was going to say, if you hadn't done the recording, I'm like, you can't be a voice coach and not record your own book. Liz, a final question I wanted to ask you, which is one that I know, certainly I've felt, and I know a number of people do, which is, why do so many of us not like the sound of our voice? Or when you hear your voice, you know, back to yourself, like you record it, it always sounds different to what you think it is. Why is that?
There's some good research on this. If you Google voice confrontation, there's lots on this.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple reason is partly that the way we hear our voices is as much through bone conduction. So we hear our voices from within ourselves.
Mm.
And when we hear it on a recording, we're hearing it from outside ourselves. The trouble is that the recording is often a more accurate representation of our sound because it's our sound without the buzz.
Right.
But what I would say to people who don't like that sound is really just every day play with the feeling of your voice. Think about how your voice feels to you, not how it sounds to you, because then you have more control of it. And one of the reasons we don't like it when we hear it is because it's out of our control.
Hmm.
You can't really control sound. It's already left your body by the time it hits your ear. But
yeah.
If you play with the feeling of your voice, how it buzzes, how your breath is, I can promise you that when you hear it, it doesn't sound quite so confronting. So just how does my voice feel today, not how does it sound?
Okay, I love that. That's a great tip there. I mean, lots through this, but that's a really good tip. That's a good tip to kind of bring that part to a close. I'm sure we could go on much longer because I imagine from speaking to you, it feels like we've just touched the surface of the knowledge you've kind of and experience you've amassed in this field. But that was really, really useful kind of exposition of the topic. I've always been fascinated by it, but it's something I haven't really looked too deeply into. So it's really great to have your perspective on it. Thank you so much for that. Okay, so now we move into the kind of final part of it, which is the 10 question quick fire round. So I just asked you 10 questions. They're a bit random. No right or wrong answer. Tina, don't think too much about it. Although sometimes the questions are harder when I read them out than I intended to be when I wrote them. But yeah. But yeah, so
I can't do fractions. I've worked that out in half.
Yeah, no, don't worry. It's not going to be that. Yeah, so just instinctive answers, whatever comes to mind. Okay, so ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, question one. If you could be the voice coach for one person, living or dead, who would that person be?
Oh, my God. Someone related, someone who can lead climate, you know, our response to climate, because there's nothing more important right now. So I want to, Greta Thunberg. Yeah.
Excellent. Love that. Okay. Excellent. Cool. Question number two, on a scale of 1 to 10, how nervous do you get before a speech?
Ooh. I did one at the Purcell Rooms on the South Bank last year, and it's the space. If the space feels like, you know, this opera singers sing on this stage, who are you? Then I get really quite nervous.
Okay, so
eight or nine.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
But I know it's okay. When it comes, I go, okay, this is cool. You're nervous, right, girl? You better step up then. So it's nerves, but it's kind of nerves that I know are okay.
Yeah, and I saw you write about, in a way, using the nerves and feeding on them to bring your voice alive, as opposed to kind of letting it defeat you, basically.
Exactly.
Okay, question three. If you could, now this might be tougher than it sounds, actually. If you could bring back one fashion trend from any era, what would that be?
Oh, that's hard. I'm a 90s girl. So, yeah, I mean, all of that kind of baggy t-shirts and stuff, but right. I can't really wear them anymore. But that was the early 90s was fun.
yeah, definitely. Okay, question four, love, wealth, or happiness? If you could only have one, which would it be?
Love.
Yes.
Oh, love is happiness, isn't it? So love, I think.
All right, cool. Yes.
The world around.
Question five, if you had to relive one day for the rest of your life like Groundhog Day, what day would that be?
Oh, that's really hard.
Yeah, I know, that stumps a few people.
I have small kids right now, so what I've learned from parents with older children is that you miss the early days. So maybe a very happy day with small children where everything was fine and nobody cried, and, you know, just to have that day, I think would be nice.
Cool.
It will pass quite quickly.
Yes, it does. I mean, we're still in the non-teenage years, although my daughter's kind of, you know, 10 going on 20. So we'll see. Okay, so question, what did we get to? Question six. If you could only listen, speak, or see, which would you choose?
Ooh. Don't know. I think... very hard to let go of any of them. I'm quite
especially
visual.
For a voice coach.
Yeah, I'm quite visual, so if I could only, I think I would want to have sight, but I would miss the other two so much.
Yeah, I think sight has been the most popular answer from recollection. I think
just navigate your way through the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, question seven. If you could choose one track, one song to walk out to, like your theme song, what would that track be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. That's so in my choir, we what have we been singing that I've loved recently? Everywhere by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, wow.
Or something by The Killers. Yeah, I don't know. I just, things I'm singing, I kind of remember.
Oh, so this isn't like church choir hymns. This is urban choir.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and something soulful, something, you know, a bit of Aretha Franklin. I don't know, but I think, yeah,
probably Aretha's good. Aretha's good.
It's not a question I can easily answer, I have to say.
Yeah, as I said, I think these are tougher than I'm giving them credit for, to be honest. question eight. Would you rather be the world's greatest painter or the world's greatest chef?
Painter. I think I've got more chance on that one.
Right. Question nine. What was your favorite period of life? Education, kind of school, uni, early work life, or now?
Now, we get richer, don't we? We learn more, so I think it gets better.
Excellent.
Some things don't, but life, I think, gets more interesting as you get older.
Cool. And question 10, which actor would provide the voiceover for the cartoon movie of your life?
Oh my God, these are hard.
You can't use yourself, right? So which actor?
Tina Fey.
Oh, cool. Oh yeah, she's so expressive and really expressive voice. Yeah, yeah.
Or Amy Schumer. They're just funny, those two.
Yeah. Excellent. All right, so that was it. That was the 10 questions. Very random, but as I say, I'm a bit harder than I always give them credit for, but thank you for thank you for taking part in that. Listen, I'm sure people will want to learn more about you, take some of the stuff that you do for themselves, maybe book you and hire you. Where should they go? Where's the best place for them to go and find you?
So carolinegoida.com is the site. Mm-hmm. And the books are, I mean, I hate to just recommend Amazon. So Amazon, Waterstones, you can get the books. And if anybody does buy one of the books and emails us, then we'll send them a full set of audio courses as well. So it's
oh, wow. Oh, definitely do that. Yes, excellent. Well, there's a great tip for you guys listening. Thank you very much for that, Caroline. Really fascinating interview. I loved every part of that. I'm going to be listening back to it and kind of taking notes again, add to my spreadsheet of notes. listen, yes. Thank you so much for joining me on the Great Speech Podcast. Real honor to have you on. As you know, I like to say goodbye in a different language each time. And when I have a guest, I give that privilege to the guest. So if you can tell us the language and then take us out with the words.
What, should we do Polish? Because I lived in Poland for a year and I've forgotten all of it. But I can
remember. Have not had any Polish so far, yes.
Do widzenia. It sounds beautiful. They have so many z and z.
is Polish... there's some languages that I think are... I think must just be great to be able to speak, like Italian, you know. It's really just rich. Oh. Yes, yeah. what's Polish like?
It's just it's different world and just... It's rich and it's impossible because it declines beyond anything you can imagine, even in Latin. But right. it's a fabulous country and it's a great language. So do widzenia is a good one.
Do widzenia. Excellent. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that, Caroline. Thank you guys for listening to another week of the Great Speech Podcast. There'll be another episode probably in 2 weeks. Not sure on what yet, but you know me, I'll make it up as we go along. See you later. Cheers. Bye.